What's up, everybody? Welcome to Tuesday edition of Browner and the Lawhead. We are not at a golf course. We're at our respective studios. I'm John Browner, as always, joined by my co-host, Jason Lawhead. You'll see him. There he is.
Hello.
In the flesh. What's going on, Jason? What's going on, everybody who listens to the mightier 1090 ESPN? A week after our two-year anniversary, we are available via podcast. We're available via YouTube under Kaplan and Crew. Jason, you got plans tonight.
Mm-hmm.
What's up, brother?
Yeah, down to Petco tonight. You know,
is this considered a date night in your house?
This is, my wife's not coming, so yes, this is a date night. this is gonna be a fun night, and we've been trying to do this. Me and these two other friends I went to high school with that have been living out here for a long time, and we're gonna be this time Petco. We've been to probably Anaheim a few times because obviously the Cleveland new nicknames don't play in San Diego often. But this year, you know, and with the schedule, more having to get a interleague series in somewhere. They landed on the schedule this year. So can't wait, man. It's going to be the Indians. I still say, and I'm, you know, as
just say, not Indians, just say not Indians.
That's good, not Indians.
Right.
Are, you know, two games clear of first right now. They've been playing great ball since around mid to July. They were like a game over 500 on July 15th. And now they're roaring. They're playing great baseball and they're getting a lot of timely hitting and there's pop all over the lineup and some pitching is coming through. And you know, anything can happen in baseball, you know, and the way the Yankees are spiraling and,
yikes,
you know, who knows? We took the last two of a four-game series against the Astros and kind of knocked them off track a little bit and have beaten some pretty good teams lately. So.
You ain't finna beat nobody today, though. So you could take you could take the naughty Indians and go on back to your two games to Cleveland because y'all finna get a rude awakening when y'all roll up in the building today down in Petco downtown. That game is set to kick off in about 40 minutes from now, 30 minutes from now. So we'll talk about the Padres a little bit later in the show. I can't let Jason sit around here and talk about the not Indians like this is a Cleveland podcast, even though it may feel like that sometimes. On the show today, something happened in the Little League World Series, and as a black man, I need to comment on this because I'm in the media, and I'm one of two black people in the media here locally every day in San Diego. Shout out to Brandon Stone. Urban Meyer got a job, so white people keep filling up. We'll talk about that. We'll get into the Padres series that they got coming up against the not Indians. And when Katie's finally made a decision, and shocker, it's what we all thought it was. So, but before I get to that, I want to address something that occurred, is the best way to occurred at the Little League World Series. This is a team putting cotton on a little black boy's hair who's on the team. So now these kids are all on the same team. So this isn't like some random team doing this to him. I guess people who are supposed to be outraged about this, I can't meet you there. I can't. Because what I will tell you about it is this. If you have young kids doing things, one, this is always a reflection of their parents. If you see young kids doing something suspicious that you deem to be either hurtful or racist. Racism is not, you're not born with it in your DNA. It's not a part of your genetic makeup. It is ignorance. So if these kids did this out of ignorance and racism, then this is a parenting issue. Also, for the young man who allowed them to do this to him, this is a parenting issue. If we don't, as black men, or if we don't, as a society, that being white people, Mexican people, Asian people, you find the nationality, and I'm going to say those people. If we don't educate our own children about self-respect and how some things are not a joke, Then that's on us. Then that's on us. People say that these kids are racist. I find that very, very difficult to believe. I don't think these kids are racist. I think these are kids having fun because he wasn't the only one that they did that to. He was just the one that the television cameras caught it. So if you don't raise your children to know the difference between what is a joke and it's funny and what's a joke and that's insensitive to me, because the kid didn't look happy sitting there letting them put cotton on his head. You have to teach your kids to speak up for themselves. And sports plays a great part in that. And I hope at the end of this, that young man learned a lesson and these kids around him and their parents, most importantly, learned a lesson on what you should and should not be doing in certain situations. So that's the part that really got under my skin about the situation, is that the people claiming that these kids are racist. And then again, if you don't know the story, the Little League World Series is always on ESPN. It's a huge thing. It kind of re-energizes people's faith in sports until they start giving these kids NIL deals. So the ESPN cameras caught this Little League team putting cotton from a stuffed animal on the head of one of the players. That player just so happened to be black. And if you know anything about African-American history in this country, white people putting cotton on a black person is never a good thing. So, Jason,
first off, who's managing this team? Walter Matthau? What? Where do you get the notion? Where do you even get that notion? I don't even understand the notion to sit any child down, and especially a black child, if all the, and empty a bag of cotton balls on him like he's an art project. So right. It's strange. It's a strange, just the notion of it all, even to just get to that point to leap from, to be like, all right, grab the bag of cotton balls. We're going to hairdress this guy. And you, like you said, he's sitting there taking it. He looks like he's getting his head shaved going into the military. Like, he is the last thing this guy wants to do. Like, he just got drafted to go to Nam. That's what he looked like. So it's a weird whole thing. And when it comes down to the racism part, obviously being this far away from it all, and you make some points that there's kids, but you know, at the end of the day, kids are exposed to, and you know, they see more and absorb more than anybody ever has. And you're right. I agree that, you know, racism and its sense of, is not born right in your DNA, but it can be learned outside the home. It can be learned from exposure too. It cannot be taught in the home and still learned outside the home, just like racism can be taught in the home, and someone that grows up from that can unlearn that when they become an adult, when they start seeing the points of views and they start being exposed to certain things that are like, oh wait, that was all wrong. So in both respects, but it's an interesting dynamic here, because you'd have to believe, like, man, that's just the notion, as I mentioned earlier. It's just an interesting notion that, and like you said, unless Billy Bob Thornton's the manager, nobody stepped in to go, what are you guys doing? Get out of here. What are you, knock it off. Go run out there, pour a Pepsi over his head or something. I mean, come on, like. Yeah, so strange to me. Kids, who knows? It's weird that just even became anything. It's just at the Little League World Series of all places. It's just it's a strange story to come out of such a prestigious event that showcases our children, as you said, in a way where there's still that purity and that innocence. And you know, and maybe that's all it was. It's just a strange way,
right,
to have fun, man.
Everything is not something to get outraged about.
No, absolutely not.
Some things that we let get into the stream on, whether it be Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, some of the things that we let people poison the pool. We let people poop in the pool, so to speak. And this is what happened with this particular thing. It got to somebody who has nothing to do with the Little League World Series, probably has no idea what it's like or what's what's meant behind it, not the cotton part, but just what it stand, what the Little League World Series stands for. And then we let people corrupt something that's not, that's just harmless. Like this incident, again, it's harmless because these are children probably just having fun at the expense of another person. And I've made fun of a lot of people.
Yes, when you're a kid, absolutely.
Right. Sometimes the weakest kid gets made fun of.
Yep.
And that's just growing up, man. That's just growing up. So let's not allow someone who is a social justice warrior to poop in the pool of the Little League World Series. I don't want this team coming out and apologizing about the insensitivity and blah, 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 blah. And these kids aren't like that. Man, you don't need to explain that. So hopefully people who have seen this have had a cooler head look to it and not ran to your Twitter going, this is racist. I can't believe these kids. So chill out. What y'all need to be.
And never say never, Browner, right? Tomorrow the story can come up and that kid's parents goes, hey, man, that's the least worst thing they've ever done to this kid. You know, all of a sudden, who knows, in the world we live in, this cycle could just be started thinking. But yeah, I mean, let kids be kids. Like, kids aren't any different than they were back then. They've just exposed to different things. And now they're being, that would have never been posted and circulated in 1994, 1987, and kids would have had fun and maybe they just would have laughed it off. And who knows, maybe that kid's like, he's stone facing because he knows the camera's on there and he won't, there, you know, who knows. It's an interesting notion why they would do it, but it's probably a bigger what to do than it really is.
Speaking of terrible, this guy
terrible
now has another job. Urban Meyer has now apparently going to rejoin Fox after being ran out of professional men's coaching after, I don't even want to call what he did a scandal. He was literally just being himself and got caught on camera with his hands up another woman's center, if you know what I mean. Hut, hut, hut.
Yeah. He was on the long count. He was trying to pull everybody else on the dance floor off sides. That was a man, he's under center for a while. It looks like he's gonna let the play clock kick down to one there.
I'm not a big college pregame show guy. And I'm really not going to do a lot about this. I just want people to understand, when Urban Meyer got fired for the type of behavior he was exhibiting, you're now going to have that exact same man chastising kids who make mistakes that play college football. Okay? So let me rewind that one more time. Urban Meyer is now going to be on the pregame show for Fox Saturday College Football, where his job is to now critique the on and off the field activities of young men. After being fired from his previous job for putting his hands up another woman's chute,
and all the other, that all wasn't the other his stuff, wife. How he treated certain players, the way he spoke to certain players, the things that he, you know, the personality traits he exhibited, threats and stuff like that. And,
kicking guys. Like, when the report came out that Urban Meyer kicked one of the players, and the guy got pissed and was like, oh, don't kick me. And he goes, I'm head ball coach. I could do whatever I want. Right. Yeah, bro, at Ohio State, you can kick players. You can't kick an, you can't kick a grown man. Like, and so the idea that this man hasn't even been out of work for 2 years and is already employed judging kids, young men, 18 to 23. Well, now with the COVID year, 18 to 27, depends on what team they play for. So I don't like it. I think it's gross. And I think Fox, of all places, should be ashamed of themselves for giving this guy a platform. You mean to tell me that there are no other coaches available? that can take that job?
Well, that's the thing, you know, it's the three national titles. It's the, you know, the reputation. But like, these guys are so well connected that they have to commit a crime in court. Browner, they have to commit a crime in court to have to face any types of consequences. They'll always be able to resurface through scandals. That's just the where the world's gone for on field, off field, owner's suite, you know, several even outliers from that. And oftentimes the owner's suite and the well connected at the highest, you know, production departments of how everybody gets football and pro, college, whatever, they're the most protected, right? They're the most Teflon. So the fact that that doesn't surprise me. That doesn't surprise me at all.
But you said something interesting that always catches my attention about Urban Meyer.
Mm-hmm.
You spoke of his success, and that's true. He was a very successful football coach at Florida. He was a very successful football coach at Utah.
Bowling Green before that. Go look at his record there. I mean, his winning percentage when you collect all of those schools is crazy. It's a crazy winning percentage when you stack it up against all the greats when you talk percentages. I mean, it's a real impressive.
It's,
I mean, he went 14-0 at Utah.
Also, in addition to those things, it's also very impressive. Coach Aaron Hernandez, a mass murderer.
But you cancel that out with Tim Tebow. I mean, I don't even think that guy's had sex yet. So, you know. he's literally never stabbed anybody.
Listen, Aaron Hernandez probably had sex with Tim Tebow. So, as great as Urban Meyer's coaching on the field has been, Urban Meyer's character issues at every single stop has showed his ugly head. And maybe it wasn't him, but it was the team. Like the fact that he had a guy who had repeatedly sexually or had physically assaulted his wife on his coaching staff and pretended to know nothing about it, even though the wife directly told his wife, so you know he knew, and then tried to hire that guy at the Jaguars. Like, his behavior has been nothing but arrogant at every single stop because, like you spoke before, he was highly successful.
And he's well connected.
And so the fact that still does not resonate enough to offset him now giving his opinions about the same thing that he was either ran out of or got a headache or I don't know what was his last excuse to leave college football to spend more time with his family, and then you find him at his own bar with his hands up another woman's backside. So good luck with it, Fox.
Yeah.
Good
luck. You know, it's like at the end of the day, like you said, it's a pregame show. I don't know. I don't tune in regularly to him. If I'm, you know,
I don't watch
it's an early morning and I'm throwing some laundry in or something, I might turn on, but I'm not paying attention to what Urban Meyer's saying or Matt Leinhardt. You know, first off, guys like you and I, we have our own opinions.
Leinart,
I mean,
man.
We can watch and create things that are probably
right.
On the regular, better takes and better thoughts and observations. So I don't go to that for that. But thanks for the national title, Urban.
So shout out. In addition to that, there's a lot coming up on the second half of the show. Jason is going down to the game today. If you're listening to him and driving, it's called Radio Magic. He's taking some buddies down there. They're playing the Not Indians. The Padres are coming off a split of the Washington Nationals, which, by the way, was utterly one of the grossest splits I've watched. I don't think I've ever had my stomach turn on some one-run games as I had in that one. And Jason also wants to say a special thank you. Well, I'll let him explain it when we come back from break. Also, Kevin Durant has made a decision. Kevin Durant knows which team he wants to play for next year. And that team knows that they want Kevin Durant. So this entire thing apparently worked itself out. We'll tell you how. We'll give you the details where. And we don't give you details when, because you know when the season starts. But I'm John Browner. This is Browner and Lawhead. You're listening on the Mightier 1090 ESPN. We've got, like I said, a ton of stuff to go. So much room for fun. So much room for entertainment here on Browner and Lawhead. Your home for fun and entertainment Monday through Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. We'll be back. What's up, everybody? You're listening to Browner and Lawhead, but this message is about this Saturday here at Lexus San Diego. Come down, join me, Scott Kaplan, and the Padres Pod Squad in their traveling museum as they're giving away jerseys, and we're giving away fun and good times, lots of prizes. The Swinging Friar will be there. Bring your kids, bring your family. It's going to be a great time, and as usual, let's go Padres! All right, ready? Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Browner and Lawhead right here on the Mightier 1090 ESPN. Fresh off our 2-year anniversary. If you're in your car and you're driving down the freeway, you're on your way to watch the San Diego Padres get this win against the Not Indians. You are in luck because you might be able to see somebody there. My co-host, our friend, Jason Lawhead, will be down at the game in his seats. Jason, let me give you a little heads up about these seats because I know you've been in them. More of a question than a heads up. The best part about these seats, and tell me if I'm right or wrong, you don't have to worry about people coming across you in the row. That's been my favorite thing about these seats. I watch people in the row in front of you, just constantly people getting up and moving, getting up and moving, getting up and moving. And I'm like, oh, I would hate that. These seats, none of it. None of it. Love it.
And they're on the aisle side, left side, which means no one ever walking up, even if it's in packs of a family or walking down to their seats below you, ever get in your sight line. They're off your left field. They're actually, you'd have to be looking at left field while the pitch was going on for them to even remotely be in your way. And the way they've designed that park is those people's heads disappear low anyway, even if the ball's hit there. I mean, the sight line is the best thing about that seats, those seats. And there's about 7 or 8 other things that are great about those seats. Near the entrance, near the exit, near the restrooms, near the breweries, near the team shop, near everything. I mean, in, out, ugh.
Yeah. Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, as they like to say.
So, yeah, we're going to.
So, before we get into what's going to happen tonight against the Not Indians, you had a friend of the family.
Tonight's actually going to be just by some kind of terrible coincidence. It'll be a nice kind of respite. I'm going with a couple of guys that I went to high school with that are – you know, class of 90, class of 91, I'm class of 92. And a guy back home just passed away, class of 89, Adrian Abrahamowitz. And I just wanted to say rest in peace to him. He was the head men's baseball coach at the historic Oberlin College, which is right down the street from where we grew up, Oberlin, Ohio. Just, you know, historic. It's, you know, last stop on the Underground Railroad. I believe Oberlin College is the first multi-race and co-ed university in the United States. So a lot of history there. And he was just a phenomenal coach. He molded so many great players and he was so well respected. He played hoops for my dad. He was a baseball player, went on to be a brilliant coach, but he was one of those guys that played every sport. And it's funny because even though he was on my dad's worst team ever, when I was a freshman, he was a senior. He was building for the future. That's the worst team in my dad's career. And he was just a role player. You know, my dad would talk about him in the sense of like the greatest players ever, because he was a great practice player. My dad loved practice players. When my dad talks about basketball old times with guys that come to visit him still, he talk about practice players. And he was like, all the drills, you just do them. You just dive. You just eat nails. You go through the wall on all the fun drills, all the non-fun drills. And he said Adrian's name in the breadth of, you know, the top 3 or 4 players that he ever coached in almost 40 years that were, you know, always the best. And so even though he wasn't a great basketball player and he was on a bad team, it didn't tarnish how my father saw and respected and then later befriended him. And, And my dad's a cancer survivor, so he was able to be around Adrian early in the fight. The fight has gone on for a long time, and he finally sadly succumbed to it the other night. Too young, 51 years old, so much more to give and offer. So I know, you know, some people back home watch the show and, you know, pay attention to it. So anybody that it's out there and these guys that I'm going with tonight that we had already planned this, you know, knew him, played baseball with him, you know, so we're going to have a couple of toasts tonight. And win or lose, it's going to be a great night to be around that kind of community this far away from it all, because I know a lot of people I know, my dad and other people, you know, are hit hard by this one. So rest in peace.
Rest in peace indeed, man. The unfortunate,
yeah,
unavoidable,
man,
medical conditions that people succumb to. One of the main ones is cancer. It affects everybody. Yeah. If you're not a hermit, if you don't live under a rock, you know someone who's been affected by cancer. My mother and my sister have both been affected by cancer. They were able to beat it. But I know people who were not able to beat it. And so when you are remembering those people, they're almost always when it comes to cancer,
yeah,
they're taken.
No doubt.
Soon.
Especially when they have so much and to so, offer, you know, they're molding people. They're teaching.
Yeah,
people.
Man.
I mean, he would have went down as a legend. He would have coached till into his seven. He would have went down as a legend. He had a great program there for a small college baseball program. Got, you know, but they'll remember him forever. I'll tell you that.
So to speak on baseball in his honor, let's talk about what's up next for the San Diego Padres, because I told you guys they're playing the not Indians. So you can't, I'm just going to call
them. And they're actually Indians, throwing a former Indian at him. Clevinger goes and tonight, I guess, for the Padres.
So we're going to see if tonight the Padres can keep the road winning, because that's been a massive struggle for them to get games in a row. With Clevinger on the mound tonight, which I think is a good place for him to start. It's always good to go against your old team. I think Soto's walk percentage since he's gotten here, Josh Bell has went on a kamikaze level nosedive, only to at the end appear to have to be pulling up out of it now, basically winning the last two games single-handedly against the Nationals. Manny Machado's been hot. Kim's defense after running into that wall. So I feel like after the trade, the team is really starting to find itself. Josh Hader's sabbatical, I guess, at throwing strikes has really put them in a negative position out of the pen. But doing it by committee, you may actually stumble on something that I think they have with Nick Martinez. If the Padres can figure out a way to get a reliever for the seventh inning, Hader in the eighth, and Nick Martinez in the ninth. If you can work out that combination of those guys being solid for the next 40 games, I think that you will really have a recipe going forward, because this is what the Kansas City Royals did. The Kansas City Royals had two good starters, but they had four guys in a bullpen you literally couldn't hit. And if it got to the sixth inning, the game was basically over in the seventh if the Royals had the lead. And with the Padres' bullpen struggles, maybe this might be a way for Hader to get a different role, get a different perspective, come back with a different outcome game after game, and Nick Martinez can find a new role, because as a starter, his second time around in the lineup, he is abysmal. So, and we know our starters, with the exception of Yu Darvish, can only go six innings to begin with. So I like what they're trying to do with the bullpen. I like what I'm starting to see with the team on a day-to-day basis offensively, even though they're still not scoring.
Yeah.
The not Indians are playing well, actually. So this will be a great contest.
Yeah, well, this is huge for both teams right now, especially San Diego, who is obviously off the any chance of a division title. I mean, that was gone a long time ago. So to be able to step in and go, hey, we can go and knock down a division-leading team who is playing really, really good baseball under a once again healthy, not going to the doctor anymore, Tito Francona, one of the shortlist greatest managers in the history of baseball. And,
I agree,
you know, this is a huge test, as you said, because of the tinkering with the bullpen. Obviously, there's some optimism there. There's some stuff that you can hopefully maybe, you know, find itself. But this is a great test because the Guardians, the Guardians are
so not Indians,
a really good team at getting to bullpens. I mean, this, especially in this last streak and when they've played well, they score runs late. They have an ability to weather a good start and get to some bullpens and score some runs and win some games exciting and late because they've got a lot of pop in their lineup throughout the lineup, right? And you got Ramirez sitting there as one of the just top dangerous hitters in the middle of a lineup. And then, you know, Rosario, Hernandez. I mean, these guys are slapping the ball around. Naylor. And so Tito gets guys on base. He's really good about hitting runs, how to get guys, you know, using the extra out. So this is a huge test for San Diego's bullpen at the best to say that, you know, we can beat a team like this who beats bullpens, get a good start from Darvish, win it for him, score some runs. And as you said, I don't think offense is going to be a problem. I think that's going to eventually just create itself once everybody's good about we can get to the sixth or seventh inning with a starter and the bullpen.
Right.
And if it's maybe Hader, you know, gets a shot again sometime next month due to whatever circumstances unfold. And this is a little, like you said, sabbatical that helps him. And maybe he's, you know, his engine's running by October or this all works out. But it's but one of the two has to happen.
Team. I think this might be the most dangerous team in baseball because they have all the components, even without Tatis coming back. They have all the components to get into a short series and hurt you. They've got pitching.
Yeah.
They've got high-level pitching that when it's right, it's just as good as anybody else. And they have a very, very impressive, although not statistically, but from a name perspective, and some guys statistically, in that lineup, top to bottom, that can give you moments. And in a playoff series, all you need is a guy to give you moments. You don't need a guy to be sustained excellence through the playoffs. You need a couple of guys to get you key hits in moments after your stud guys, after the Machados, the Sotos, the Bells, the Cronenworths, after those guys have gotten in position, you don't need every guy to do something big. You need a guy every now and then to show up and support those guys. So I think that we're starting to see that. I think we're starting to see this team kind of get into a good rhythm and get into a good groove, man. And I really feel that. And I think tonight is going to be the first test of this team being whole as going forward against another.
And you got to come back the next day really in about 12 and a half hours. That's the other thing. So and Cleveland's going to come right back. They're always a gritty team. And so your bullpen's got to do some work tonight. It's probably going to have to do some work by, you know, 3 p.m. tomorrow afternoon or 2:30 tomorrow afternoon. So can you put those kind of days together? Can you get that focused against a team that is going to be focused? Because the Indians feel it right now. Or they feel it right now. Mm-hmm. And they feel like they can a couple of wins against a good team like this can give them some distance. And the way they've played against the AL Central lately, and they've got them coming down the pike, you know, Indians are playing with confidence. They're coming in. And this is huge for the Padres to be able to say, you know, yeah, we may not sniff the Dodgers, but we can play with postseason baseball teams.
I think it's great that this series, albeit only two games, if swept, both teams can leave this series going, all right, here we go. So it's a great opportunity for both teams, and I can't wait to see what happens. I think game starts at about now.
Oh, am I there?
You know, Stay out in the parking lot on your car phone. That backdrop you've created, is fantastic here on the YouTube. You're listening to Brown and Lawhead. This is our hourly slice of sports heaven from Monday through Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. I'm John Brown, and that's Jason Lawhead, who is on his way to the game tonight. We dealt with this saga for a long time back and forth, and it appears now that the NBA knows that the training camp's coming, and it's time to kind of get these other stories out of the way. One of the two stories that are still waiting to be done, taken care of, is the Knicks getting Donovan Mitchell because no one else really seems to want him, and the Nets making Kevin Durant believe no one else wanted him. So Kevin Durant has now come to a quote-unquote agreement with Joseph Tsai, Steve Nash, and Sean Marks that he will play with the team this year. Apparently, everything else is water under the bridge, but I'm telling you right now, that bridge is just a boat. That bridge is just the water that's under it. Steve Nash will be then thrown under it and floated off with the current if this team doesn't start off in the way that they wanted to. So this is a Steve Nash. You're on the hot seat. So Kevin Durant can get his pound of flesh. He can come back, and we can figure out what to do. Are you shocked that Kevin Durant decided to stay with the Nets?
No, I think 2 weeks ago we said and predicted this, that it's all going to come back to this. And I even said then, my biggest worry isn't to Kevin Durant averaging 27 or 28 points a game and getting his block shots and getting into the stat sheet. He's just built that way. He's just a machine that way. My problem or my concern would be, I know I'm hanging on to him, is he going to give me maximum team effort in the way we have to play as a team? Because, you know, Kevin Durant was able to go to Golden State, and even if Kevin Durant didn't give the maximum team effort, he was such a good player within a bunch of guys given the maximum team effort, who were great players, who already knew the system, who were already coaching under the coach that is cemented there and wants to be there, and the owner feels great with him and the team. So he could go hang through that and just make that. That was an Olympic team. I mean, that was a U.S. Olympic team. You wouldn't have to go try out for the Olympics. Those guys could have went and beat every other country. That's how good they were. And dialed in as they were a team. So the fact is he is here in Brooklyn as the top of the pyramid. Everything comes off of him, and it has to be him in the frame of mind that this is for the maximum team effort, right? You know, say what you want about LeBron, and maybe he checks out when he knows it's time to check out and he goes and pads his stats. But when he knows he's the leader and he's got guys that are, and it's bought in, and there's a team right there. Because I'll tell you, I had a friend who used to be I think I mentioned before, he was a trainer for the Memphis Grizzlies for a long time, worked for the New Jersey Nets. He worked in the NBA his whole life, retired a few years ago to go in his own business. But that's what he was. He was also like the traveling secretary. He was a trainer. He was head trainer. They wear the suit. They look like an assistant coach on the bench. And he says every year in the NBA, there's about three or four teams that really know when they head to camp that they can win it all. That's all. That's it. Deep down, when they're honest, there's a lot of teams that know, hey, we can win some games. We can get into the playoffs. And who knows if one of those four teams that we know are probably going to win it, if somebody major gets hurt or a guy or two, maybe we can find ourselves in a mix. But let's just go. And he goes, every season starts like that. And just about every team that knows that they can win it all are right there to win it all at the end. And it's probably two of those four teams in the finals a lot of times. So that's where if I'm the Nets, if I'm a Nets fan, if I'm all of those functions, I don't care how great Kyrie can play. We've said before, he's an unbelievable scorer, yes. I don't know if Ben Simmons can fit in if there isn't some leader of the team creating that effort. And that's where I think they're going to fall short at the end of the day. I think that's his biggest weakness, is being that guy that gets all the other guys to go, I'm going and I'm jumping on Durant's back, and we're just going to plow through this thing. No, because the only time Durant ever plowed through this thing, the plot was already built.
You said which I mean, it's common knowledge. And by the way, that theory works with almost every sport. The NBA probably now has about five teams that can that will come into camp thinking they can win a title. I think it is the Warriors,
yep,
the Clippers, the Bucks. I think the Nets think they can win. I don't know if they will, but I think they think
deep
down.
He goes, guys will say, like, hey, man, we're here to win a title. And they'd say it out loud. They high five each other during the workouts and they're saying it. What he's saying is deep down in the gut. And do the Nets really think that they're one of these teams when they look at the teams you just mentioned? Because they ain't stupid. They know what's in LA. They know what's in Golden State.
True.
They know what's in Milwaukee. They know that there's a system in place there. They know that there's that hunger to win the second. I mean, these teams, I mean, think about the Clippers. They're just, I mean, they're so hungry to get to the finals just to represent the Clipper franchise in a finals. They haven't even been to a Western finals, I don't think, or they if they have it, won. No, they haven't. So the fact is that can the Nets really say that? Can they look around and be like, oh, yeah, we've never really played together. I don't really want to be here, even though I'll average 30 a game. And Kyrie, who knows where he wants to be, but he'll average 25 a game. And Simmons, like, I mean, I don't know. Can they really look at each other? Nash, can they really look at each other and say, yeah, man, we're going to camp thinking we can win this? No, I don't think they are. I don't think they're one of those four or five teams.
Well, you're correct. Then it is three, because those are the three that I think that look at each other.
Yeah, the Lakers are in the same boat.
All right, we got it.
They'll talk. I know the Clippers are deep down.
The Lakers are in the exact same boat as the Nets.
They don't want to play the Clippers. A healthy Clippers all year, they will sweep that Laker team in the Staples Center.
So we got more for y'all tomorrow. Jason, enjoy the game. Until tomorrow, Brown and Law, Head Miter, 1090 ES.